Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is season 4, episode 20.
Indeed it is.
So what are we discussing this episode, Drew?
Okay, well, we've been to see a film. It's been quite a while since we've done a film episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it has.
So we've actually sort of stuck to the original brief and done a lot of games recently, but no, we're back to the cinema. We've been to see Bad Times at the El Royale, which came out. I think it came out in America a little bit earlier than this, but it came out here this week.
Yeah.
And I think we've had a kind of eye on this since we first saw the trailer, because it looked stunning in the trailer, and it had such a great cast, so I think it
Yeah.
attracted us right away. And we went to see it a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Forget.
It's kind of it's a bit of a funny one because we went to the cinema to see something else and saw the trailer for this, and then went to see Hotel Artemis thinking it was this film because I was like, oh, isn't there another hotel one? And you're like, no, this is it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then who did you think was in it?
I thought it was Josh Brolin. I could have sworn I'd seen Josh Brolin in the trailer, but no, it's kind of just Jeff Bridges hiding behind a quite massive beard.
Beard. Yeah, so it was really weird. This became this kind of phantom film which we didn't know existed or not until we found the trailer again. So we watched Hotel Artemis thinking, oh well, that was obviously that film, and then we were like, oh, that's disappointing because that film looked really good. And then Bad Times at the El Royale did actually exist, and now we've seen it, and it's actually better than Hotel Artemis, so
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that point. Yeah, I think we both really loved this film. It kind of spoke very directly to our sensibilities.
So it's a neo-noir. The basic premise is four people arrive at a hotel, each with something to hide. That's not the extent of the cast. There are additional characters involved, but that's the very basic premise. So it's like a situational sort of neo-noir thriller, basically.
Yep, that's absolutely it. It kind of starts out with our sort of primary four characters arriving, or I guess already being at the hotel. Oh no, no, they're
No, it actually starts with that flashback, doesn't it?
it does, yes. It starts with a really sort of well choreographed intro sequence, which is all timed to the music in like kind of the same way Baby Driver was, which I really enjoyed. And then it moves on to I think it's 10 years later, something like that, all of our current characters arriving at the hotel. And it does a very good job of immediately establishing the geography and the kind of setting and premise and style of the hotel. It does that straight up front and immediate, and that's really good, because the hotel itself kind of plays a part in the entire. It's cliche to call it an extra character, but that's kind of what it is. And by defining it so early, it's really easy to hang the rest of the story off it.
Yeah, because it's the other thing that has something to hide, the
Yes.
hotel, because it's everyone in this has something to hide, or all the guests do. It is a, yeah, like you say, cliche, but it is another character in the film. Like you said, one of the things that really attracted us was the cast. It's got Jon Hamm in it, which is a massive tick for me. So I'm a huge Mad Men fan, which and then just followed Jon Hamm from there, and he's made good choices. He makes interesting stuff generally. He was in Baby Driver, so he obviously likes that kind of stylish, kind of tense, kind of tightly written stuff. and he's just always delightful to watch. He's always having fun. It just
like, especially in this film, he's kind of full on John Hamm in this one. This is sort of the perfect role for him, and he sinks into it with like such sort of practiced ease that you can he's a real fun watch in this one.
Yeah, he is. Jeff Bridges just gets better and better and better and better.
Like a fine wine.
He's so good. And then Chris Hemsworth is the other sort of big name in it, but he's not one of the four central characters. So the other people aren't as well known.
No.
So there's a black lead woman called Cynthia Erivo. Yep. And we were talking before, and you said that she's largely from theatre. But she was really fantastic. She's kind of the heart of the thing.
She's kind of she plays this like really, really wonderful soul singer, and she gets a few opportunities to like really show off her voice. And she is like, and I'm assuming it's her. I don't think it was dubbed or anything. I'm assuming it was her voice.
She's a West
End singer anyway, and she is absolutely fantastic. And the scenes she gets where she gets to show off her voice are just really fun to watch, and B, really well integrated into the film. They are they're not just
tense.
Cut aside to show off. They are integrated with the plot of the film, and they work fantastically well.
They do. They're really fantastic. And then the other, is it Dakota Johnson who's the other main lead?
Dakota someone.
I don't know her either. But and then there was the receptionist
played by Lewis Pullman, who, like, while I was watching him, I was wondering if it was Tom Holland because they share a certain physical resemblance, I think. But no, he's actually not been in all that much. He's Bill Pullman's son, and he plays the kind of slightly lazy, slightly kind of lackadaisical.
Neurotic.
he's
just in a run down hotel. Well, it's not run down, but it's living on former glory. So it used to be the sort of bolt hole for, you know, the Rat Pack and stuff like that. And so now he's just attending this kind of dead hotel that once was a thing on Lake Tahoe. So he's just sleeping on the job pretty much.
He's like fantastic in it as well. He starts off with what you think is going to be a fairly minor role, but he does keep recurring, and his role builds over the course of the film into something really interesting, which I think he pulls off really, really well.
Yeah, I do. And the thing is, they sort of subvert those characters, the characters you think they're going to be at the beginning, which is really interesting. And he is one of those characters. Like, we've all seen the jaded hotel reception guy, manager, stroke, whatever. And, you know, it turns out his backstory is really interesting. And that's one of my favorite things about this film is, you know, it can be compared to The Hateful Eight, which I do love. I think it's possibly my favorite Tarantino film because it's just, again, got that really tight one situation, eight people. What makes this film, I think, more interesting in the end is the characters that have been drawn are just, they're just more interesting. The character connections are more interesting. The Hateful Eight kind of falls back on what you'd expect from that kind of sort of Western kind of shtick with sort of gangs and sheriffs and whatnot. Whereas this is, you don't know who they're going to be, because when one character's revealed fairly early on, you're like, oh, okay. And it's like, oh, so what does that make the rest of these people? Because you think that they've all got a connection somehow. And so it starts sort of colouring your expectations as each character is revealed. And I just thought that was really interesting. It's directed by Drew Goddard, who, you know, has pedigree, shall we say, when it comes to good writing. And I think that it's clear that he approached this as a writer, I think.
Yeah, exactly, and it's sort of very well stretched in the way it does its reveals and the way that the film ultimately ties together in something that is earned and believable by the earlier plot, but still completely unexpected, not quite where you thought things were going to go. It's really good in the first couple of acts at misleading the audience, not in a sort of deceptive way, but just kind of making you think that this is going somewhere where it actually where it isn't. And yeah, it's just very well structured, and the thing is, it's sort of a more relaxed watch. It's something you can get partly because of the aesthetic of the Royale, which is just really fantastic, and the way it's shot and the way it's very sort of a comfortable thing to watch. You can relax in it in a way that you can't in The Hateful Eight, which is kind of out of necessity, sort of saturated in that Tarantino sort of ediness and you know, he wants to get his badass moments in there. El
The sort of
Royale is much more
impending kind
relaxed
of
about that.
carnage.
Yes.
This is, it's much more, like you say, sort of laid back. It's much more lounge, which is the aesthetic and everything. It's, that sort of that mood. And in terms of, do you want to talk more about the characters before I sort of jump on? It's going to be hard to talk about the characters specifically because this is a film that, because everybody's got something to hide, it is quite difficult to go into things too much without revealing things.
I mean,
So.
when we were talking about the sort of the actors that appeared in the film, I think we didn't kind of describe what their characters were at the time. So we can start with sort of Jeff Bridges, who I think is the closest thing that we get to a protagonist. He sort of begins as he we see him just kind of standing in the parking lot at the beginning, and the well, what's her name? This whole thing, a character, Darlene.
Darlene.
Yeah, Darlene. She just kind of interrupts him and brings him out of kind of like a haze, and they have a kind of back and forth conversation. He's a priest who is checking into the Royale for reasons unknown. I think they're all kind of reasons unknown or reasons that they're not quite ready to admit. And yeah, it's just he does that so well. He has the sort of the kind of with a big beard, and he's got those wise eyes which he's kind of carried since the Big Lebowski, really. He does a really good job of that, and when his sort of background is revealed, he does a really great job of kind of adapting one into the other, and kind of there is a reason that he can't quite split the two parts of his sort of personality. It's difficult to talk about this without going into spoilers, but he does it.
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he does a really good job of kind of a character who is struggling with a duality which he doesn't quite understand himself. Yeah, I just thought he was really fantastic in that. So it's a role suited to him.
And so the other, I'd say the sort of main player is Darlene.
Yes. I misspoke when I said protagonist, but there's not really a protagonist. I'd say he's kind of the lead.
Male.
Lead male. Yeah, I guess it is more of an ensemble than a protagonist cast.
But it's definitely Darlene and Father Daniel or Daniels. It's a hard call between who is the protagonist between those two. So she is, just a singer. That's all we know about her, really. At a hotel, who put checks into a hotel. That's pretty much it. But it's really hard because you can't to say anything more than that is to reveal too much, really. And there are sort of elements of Me Too to her story, which is really interesting the way they brought that in. And then there's this great moment where she takes off her wig, which, you know, sort of as a black woman is a real sort of like statement of like, right now shit is going down. I'm like, yeah, I've had enough of this. And so, yeah, so she goes through the rest of the film with her short natural hair, which was just really cool. And especially in that setting, it's set in 1969, so you know, the sort of glossy Supreme style wig is, you know, what we see her with, and then she removes that when stuff is getting real. And I thought that was just a really cool moment. And she's just a really quietly strong character, but she's not just that. She's funny and you know, beautiful, and she's got this incredible voice as well. Yeah, and she brings this real heart to it. Yeah, especially because you're not sure what she is, you know, whether she's some sort of spy or undercover or what, you know. It's just like, yeah, it's really interesting trying to figure out who or what she is. Or is she just a woman who's wrapped up in this thing by accident? She's just checked into a hotel. So, yeah.
We sort of talked briefly about John Hamm's character as well. It's weird to discuss his character because he kind of, so he arrives at kind of after these first two as this very loquacious, very kind of talkative vacuum cleaner salesman.
Southern gent. Vacuum salesman.
Oh, what is it?
His accoutrement.
He keeps talking about his luggage. Accoutrement. I've staked my claim there. Please do not mess with my accoutrement. And since when the main characters originally arrive at the El Royale, it doesn't seem to be anyone there. Mm-hmm. He sort of shows up and he kind of starts explaining it to them. So he's very kind of, he like steals the first act. He is amazing at what he does. He just sort of, the camera sort of just focuses entirely on him and Jeff Bridges and
sort of follows him around, doesn't it, whilst they're standing bewildered.
He's
larger than life, isn't he?
He is, and he's just great fun to watch in that particular scene and the follow-ups that he has.
What was I going to say? Oh, I can't remember what else I was going to say about that character. He's the one that actually knows the hotel as well. So he knows the kind of history of the hotel, so he lays out that whole the sort of story of the hotel and how once it was, you know, this fantastic place, and and he's kind of nabbed the honeymoon suite because, you know, the company's paying. So so he sets that up, the kind of history of the hotel and stuff, which is quite interesting. And then they sort of, the last sort of the four guests who arrive is a character, and we don't know her name until later on. And it's quite neat the way we find out their names is when they sign the guest register.
Yeah.
Which is a very sort of Tarantino-esque way of finding something like that out. It's quite neat, but she just writes fuck off instead of her name. So, and that's the Dakota Johnson character. And she's when she comes in, she's got the sort of Easy Rider style jacket. So it's really interesting how the characters represent the era we're in. And this is neo-noir, and how, sort of noir died in like 1959, and then it's like 10 years later, and so you've got these characters who are still in the 60s, but then you've got these characters who are like the sort of represent the hippie era. So it's like this shift In cinematic terms as well. So I think it's really interesting. And she's one of those characters that represents this kind of new generation. So she's sort of in flared jeans and the suede tasseled jacket and stuff. And she's obviously very counterculture because she just wrote Fuck Off in the guest book, yeah. The guest register. So she's like the other half of the film and the characters. She brings that in at the beginning, which kind of plays out as the film goes on, and particularly in the third act.
Yeah.
Which brings us on to Chris Hemsworth, and his character also represents that kind of shift from the era of the noir and the sort of period of America we're in, where sort of basically everyone who was good is dead. Yeah. So Martin Luther King and President Kennedy, they're all dead by this point, and Malcolm X. And so he is like this sort of he kind of represents the loss, the end of innocence of America. The summer of love is dead, and it's moving towards the sort of Charles Manson kind of era, where the sort of the hippie movement has like this darker undertone, yeah. And stuff. So I think it's really interesting the way they play with that. Of being a neo-noir film, but also representing that shift, in sort of cinematic periods as well. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, just to be specific about it, because I don't think you mentioned it, he plays like a kind of hippie cult leader, which is kind of the sort of flower children, sort of free love kind of hippie commune, but it's immediately apparent that he's kind of the dark heart of that, and he's kind of just very egotistical, and the cult is primarily about him.
And I was thinking this when I was watching the film, and we talked about it on the walk home, is like, if this film had been made, I don't know, 10-15 years ago, it would have been Brad Pitt in that role. For sure. Yeah. It's like, I could have seen Brad Pitt really kind of running away with that, with that character, and being probably more iconic. I mean, I like Chris Hemsworth. He's very charming, he looks good and all that sort of thing, but I just didn't feel he quite sold it to me.
I don't know,
there
right.
was just something, he was just wasn't quite as charismatic as someone like a Brad Pitt would have been in that role, but he's still a cool character and he did a good job.
It's difficult for me to untangle him from the other stuff I've seen him in, which is basically just Thor and Cabin in the Woods, where he always kind of plays... Oh, and the Ghostbusters remake, which is fantastic.
The sort of lunk.
And he's just... Yeah, he's just this very kind of cheerful, friendly...
That is the thing.
Upfront guy. And I get the sense that that's what he's like in real life as well. Having like special features. I'm sure he did a great job with what he was given in El Royale, but it just doesn't fit on him.
It's the darkness doesn't quite. He's not quite there. Can't quite bring it out. He's probably too nice. I think that you're right. That's what it is. He's a bit too kind of. I know he's Australian, but kind of all American kind of look to him, but. Yeah, but I loved his scenes and stuff. So I guess it kind of goes on to the visuals if we talk about the, because this film looked freaking gorgeous. it was absolutely lush. The cinematographer is Seamus McGarvey.
And familiar name, but I'm not sure what he's done.
Okay, so he did Nocturnal Animals, which was the second film by Tom Ford, And Tom Ford's films are really, really beautiful and
Right.
sparse and spare. He also did Atonement, which looked amazing. He did The Avengers, and he did We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was
Okay.
really great looking as well, and also had these kind of lush reds. And yeah, so I was reading up about it, and it was shot on film. They were very specific about that. They had to really fight to shoot on film, and it's because they wanted to get these really rich colors, particularly the red, which
Yeah.
is something that really stands out in those scenes in the rain, outside in the rain at night. It just looks gorgeous. It has really strong
Brilliant.
color palettes, doesn't it? And
Yeah. How depressing is it that they have to fight to film stuff on film now? Because it's always so much better.
it's expensive apparently is one of the things.
Yeah.
And I guess they have to store it or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not like they don't make digital copies of it anyway. When it gets to us, it's digitized. But yeah, it just always looks so much better to shoot stuff on film.
So I thought that was interesting, and yeah, and they said also for the time period, it just worked better
Yeah.
to represent that time period, especially the flashback stuff. So yeah, and then again, in terms of my obsession with, because I'm such a film noir nerd. So yeah, I thought again they kind of did that with Chris Hemsworth's character when we have the flashbacks to him, what he's all about, and he meets this one character for the first time, and the first time we're introduced to him, he's a silhouette in sort of like bathed in lens flare, which again is that kind of that shift of film, which is kind of why the sort of like stylized film noir sort of studio films kind of died, because it was the beginning of French New Wave, and then you got films like Easy Rider, and so it was playing again into that kind of theme of like the shift in sort of generations, and I thought it was really cool the way they used that kind of visual. And then there's that other iconic bit with him in this field of golden flowers, like, because we don't know who he is in that first shot
Yeah.
on the beach, but then we know exactly who he is. He's like sort of got no shirt on, and he's in this kind of Christ pose, walking through this field of golden flowers with sort of like topless hippie girls following behind him, people just drifting along
Yeah.
behind him, and it's kind of echoed, I thought it echoed Oliver Stone's The Doors, and he was very sort of Jim
Jim Morrison,
Morrison
yeah.
kind, kind of aesthetic, and it's like, oh, okay, I've got this guy
Yeah.
straight away.
I mean, if you are a Hemsworth fan, you'll be pleased to know that he spends quite a lot of time with no shirt on in this film. He,
Or even when his shirt is on, it's like
it's not
open
quite
to the
on.
no. Yes, it's not quite on, but it was a very nice shirt. It was just a plain white shirt, but it was a really nice shirt. But yeah, so yeah, so I don't know the visuals. Do you want to talk about the hotel?
I think we've sort of mentioned how kind of like it's very the gimmick of it is it's kind of half in Nevada and half in California, so it's kind of split down the middle by a big red line, and one side is in one color scheme and one side is a different color scheme. One side kind of has a bunch of gambling machines on it, one of them doesn't. You can serve kind of alcohol on one side, you can't on the other. But it's just very sort of as soon as you come in through the main lobby, you see how kind of richly colorful it is, and how you immediately get a sense of how vibrant it could be if only for the fact that there's nobody there. Which it's just got this really, this place just kind of feels like it's yearning to be used. It's yearning to be full of like people walking around and enjoying the facilities, and it's just very strict because it's not even as if it's gotten dusty. That's not the look they've
No.
gone for. It's still maintained the way it is, and it's still clean, it's still gorgeous, and yeah, it's just really the lobby in particular is just really sumptuous and pretty and well-coloured. And then the structure of the hotel is... I'm miming it in midair with my hands, if that means anything. then the kind of structure of it is what you've got two kind of branches coming off the main hotel. And as you come out to the end of the branches where it's less maintained, it just becomes slowly and steadily more dingy and mm-hmm. more uncared for. And the bellboy outright says, oh, well, the rooms at the end, we haven't bothered cleaning those, so you can't mm-hmm. have those ones.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, as you go out from that center, it just becomes more and more of a really kind of grimy, horrible place. It's just very well kind of thematically constructed, I think.
Yeah, like everything in this film, I just think the more I think about it, the more I see in it. As I was making notes, it's really cool. Of course, the split personality of the hotel, it reflects the characters and, you know, their central conflicts and the things they're hiding and the things they have to face by the end. The plot.
We've covered a lot of it. I don't think we want to go too heavily into what the plot is. Number one, not to spoil anything, but number two, because it doesn't really matter all that much.
It is
interesting. It's a great plot. I don't mean to disparage it in that way. It's kind of got that Coen Brothers or that Fargo energy where, The plot is about kind of vaguely unrelated people just happening to clash. It all boils down to one kind of strange coincidence from which everyone kind of gets drawn into a conflict that could otherwise be avoided. And there is like one thing that could have gone right and everyone would have been fine, but because it didn't go right, now everything kind of goes up in flames.
Which
is one of my kind of favorite kind of stories. They can sort of be overused and be annoying if you watch too many of them in a row, but I thought it worked really well here.
Just to get my one last noir thing in. So it's like, because, well, the central thing of noir is the sort of fatalism that afflicts the characters. I mean, people think that noir is about sort of Venetian blinds and trilbies and, I don't know, rainy LA nights or something. But it's about this, it's about characters trying to escape their fate and that constant struggle of, you know, trying to, I don't know, be the good person, get out of organized crime or save the girl or whatever it is. I really like the way they've made that the sort of the central thing for all of the characters, but then how their fates kind of intersect with other people's and then how it kind of draws them back to, you know, their ultimate fate. It's just really neat. It's just really neatly written, and then that's carried through to the directing, the setting, the cinematography, everything. It's just a really neat, cool film. I really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it as well. I went into it expecting to kind of mildly enjoy it. You know, he had sort of, I think, read mixed reviews, and I was taken off guard by how much I really liked it. It does kind of suit my tastes very specifically, so I think I would enjoy it more than a lot of people
more
would.
More than average. Yeah, me too. I mean, this is my jam. It's just this is my kind of film.
But it's really well made, and I would recommend it to anyone who sort of likes neo-noir
Coen Brothers
or like the Hateful Eight. If you saw the Hateful Eight and want the same thing, just a bit more easygoing, this is the film for you.
It's really good.
Two thumbs up from me.
Yeah, me too. Apparently, it's got Manny Jacinto in it, who's Jason from The Good Place.
I don't recall that. Who's he in? No, I'm gonna look.
He's a named character.
Wait, One of the cameos I did like was Nick Offerman at the beginning. Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation is kind of...
Oh, okay.
He's the guy who is... In the opening sequence, he is the guy who is burying the money, and it was just...
Oh, okay.
So he is, and I didn't even notice him. He's like one of the... Is he one of the kind of...
I guess he's a culty person. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So there you go. There's another reason to watch it, because Jason's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. Jerry from Parks and Rec also shows up in it, apropos of nothing, which surprised out.
Does Drew Goddard have something to do with Parks and Rec or something?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah. Bad Times at the El Royale. I highly recommend it. I loved it.
We loved it.
Yeah. Cool. So that's it for... I guess you can talk to us places if you'd like to, or rate us on any of the places. If you enjoyed this episode, give us a thumbs up or a star or whatever the rating system is on your thing, because it's really nice to know if people like it. And you can chat to us on our places, Argue the Cast, at Argue the Cast on Twitter, we're at GameIndustry.com, and all the podcast places like SoundCloud, what are the other ones? Spotify, iTunes, and all those places.
All the places, yeah.
All the places. We're in all the places. So let us know if you enjoyed it, or if there's any other recommendations, any things that you'd like us to talk about. That would be good, so we don't have to think of things ourselves.
Yeah.
That would be helpful. So do that. So one of the cool things that I read in was the three films that they looked at as really closely, which people might be interested in, because I haven't seen two of them. So one of them was Barton Fink.
I have not seen Barton Fink.
Oh, okay. It's really great. And I can see that for the sort of like darker aspects of the hotel, how they've taken that. The other one was called Clute, which is with Jane Fonda. It looks like a really cool, like, taut thriller from the, I think, 70s, I think. But I had a quick look up and I was like, oh, that looks good. It looks like a film I need to see. And the other one that they used a lot for the sort of nighttime shots and those sort of, you know, the sort of splashes of red neon and stuff is One from the Heart, which is a Coppola film, Francis Ford Coppola film. And I had a look at the trailer and it looks amazing and just like totally unique, and I've never heard of it, and it looks like it's a sort of romantic drama thing, but it looks like it has kind of dance sequences and stuff in it, so it looks like I think possibly an influence on La La Land, and it just looks beautiful and has all this neon and kind of like Vegas nighttime shots and stuff. So those are three films that might be good if you like that kind of thing, or you like to look at people's influences. So yeah, I think I'll be trying to check those out.
Yeah,
putting them on my letterboxed
your to-watch list.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I just thought I'd throw that in there before we go.
Yeah
and then until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.